Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
Welcome to Closing Bell. I'm Scott Wapner, live from Post 9 here at the New York Stock Exchange on this Friday. This make or break hour begins with the rally interrupted as geopolitical concerns, inflation fears, and a rate cut reset all weighing on the markets today. We'll ask our experts over this final stretch what's really at stake, and that includes Fundstrat's Tom Lee. Is the story for the bulls now changing? It is a key question. We'll get his answer in just a few minutes. In the meantime, take a look at the scorecard with 60 minutes to go in regulation. A decidedly risk-off day for the markets. Bonds are up, dollar, oil, and gold also rising. Stocks are down. The VIX is up as well. Bank stocks are selling off, and that's led by J.P. Morgan following earnings. Tech also weak. Nearly every mega cap name is lower today. Apple, though, an exception. And coming up, we're going to tell you whether this week might mark an inflection point for that stock. It does take us to our talk of the tape, whether this bull market has run off the road just as earnings season gets going. Let's ask our panel, Bryn Talkington of Requisite Capital, CNBC contributor, Avi Sheffield, co-founder and CIO of Vantage Rock. She and our senior markets commentator, Mike Santoli, are here with me on set. It's good to have you with us today. Avi, I begin with you. Did anything meaningful change this week for the bulls?
I think the bulls began to recognize that, you know, you can't have your cake and eat it too, right? So the market has been looking for lower unemployment, lower costs, lower rates, lower inflation, and at the same time, looking for growth enabled by higher wages, higher prices, and higher government spending. And the reality is the last part of that's coming to reality and are continuing, and that means inflation's higher for longer, and it kind of makes it harder to have these low rates continue to have low rates come soon enough to stimulate the economy for the next leg up.
Should we be less bullish than we were? Did the game change some in some respects this week because of, you know, the inflation reads that we got?
Yes. Well, I mean, I think that the bulls have gotten ahead of themselves, right? Valuations have been expanding. If year over year, valuations are up 25%, while earnings estimates are actually about flat. And then even over the past several months, you've continued to have valuation expansion with going from the expectation of rate cuts to nearly 6 to under 2. So, you know, something needs to give. And, you know, I think it's the markets that are giving. And then you add on to that, you know, increased geopolitical risks. And it's a tougher environment.
OK, Bryn, you want to tell me what the takeaway is thus far for what's been a pretty turbulent week?
Yeah, I mean, I think as the week started, we're ending. I mean, I think it's definitely going to be risk off. You know, we don't want to see Iran and Israel get into any type of skirmish. And I think that's also, I mean, gold's down a little bit today, but gold's had a huge run. And so I think people are putting their hedges on. And I think, in addition, it's like we started the year, Scott, with 6 rate cuts and an AI euphoria. I think AI is getting a little bit tired, consolidating, and we're going to now have maybe 1 cut in December or what have you. And so I just think the market's repricing. But I think today also, I think today specifically is more geopolitical as well as yields going higher.
These are good points that are being made, Mike, and that if you were really bullish months ago on the idea that you're going to get rate cuts and that was going to be a principal part of the story, how can you possibly be as bullish today on the idea you're going to get fewer?
It's more complicated. We were operating on the premise that we might not have to make painful trade-offs and give up the idea of the Fed easing into record high stock market, 3% GDP economy. So that's something I've been saying for a while. I do look at it a little bit more about the atmospheric conditions that preceded this moment, which is the market straight up for 5 months, no 2% pullback in the S&P 500, a very tight clustering of the consensus around the soft or no landing, and yet we're going to have the Fed cut and rate and yields are going to stay tame and all of that. So I think we've gotten a pretty welcome shakeup of that opinion. And so if you had more, you have to have less conviction now in any of those views than you did 2 weeks ago. That being said, I'm not going to get too overexcited about a 0.02 percentage point, you know, upside in CPI month over month that all of a sudden tears up the entire premise of how we got here. PCE is going to be under 3% annualized, coming up in 2 weeks. And you're going to be able to kind of make both cases for a little while here, mm-hmm. that the economy's fine, earnings are going to be better than expected in the first quarter, even if they're just getting back to what we thought they were going to be 3 months ago. And so we're less than 3% from the highs. We had our first 50-day moving average test in the S&P, again, in 5 months. That was a really long stretch. So I think you've lost the momentum players. That's broken. I think that you've lost the valuation doesn't matter because we're going to get rate cuts camp. And what you have to do is have a fresh eyes on valuation relative to earnings and also the big secular themes. Because every time we think this market is getting a macro gut check, somebody says AI and three mega caps go flying. And all of a sudden we think it's back to happy days again.
So I understand, Avery, that there's been some new things introduced this week, but maybe it's important still to keep your eye on the ball,
yes.
and to keep your eye on the prize. And the prize is still, it is still the prospects that the Fed's going to cut rates this year. It just might not be as many as we once thought, but that in and of itself is why some make the argument to stay bullish.
Right. And I think that I would really agree with Mike that valuation, though, is going to matter because, yes, maybe we'll get one cut, but the only way we're going to get two cuts is actually if the economy gets much worse. And if the economy gets much worse, that means earnings are going down, and really should you be putting a high multiple on earnings weakness. So what we're looking at here right now is, you know, thinking that in this earnings season, we're likely to see a real bifurcation between those companies that have just too much in growth expectations priced in versus those where people are still uncertain about the outlook. But, you know, we have many cyclical sectors, and we even saw today from our banking earnings, I mean, very high quality, you know, banks selling off just because expectations got too high. There's really nothing wrong with the reports, but people
well,
are realizing
that. Well, the stocks went up a lot into the reports, too.
Absolutely.
But like J.P. Morgan's a poster case for that.
Sure. Yes, absolutely. And I think the point is that that's happened to a lot of the market, right? So as we sit here right now and we look at the earnings to come, I think there are very high expectations priced into a lot of areas in the market, like in cyclicals, industrials, construction, home furnishings, machinery. All of these stocks are pricing in rate cuts with growth. Like, but the growth's going to be steady and we're going to get rate cuts and then growth is going to reaccelerate. And, you know, if we don't see that in earnings, there could really be some weakness in these types of companies.
Although, Mike, I heard you make the point earlier today, and I think I heard this correctly, suggesting that there are going to be a lot of easy beats because of where, you know, expectations were relative to where they are now.
Yeah. So that's just, I think, the mechanics of analysts have downgraded their expectations for this quarter. You have a 6% GDP economy. Guess what? That's the upside of having, you know, higher inflation than we thought, as well as decent real growth. And it just seems as if you have the makings, especially once the big tech companies report in a couple of weeks, 3 weeks, whatever it is, then you usually have that 3 to 5 percentage point beat. And I think FactSet is basically saying that. So it's a little bit of a turkey shoot, like we kind of set ourselves up to have the big beat. But the point is, the 12-month forward forecast has continued to go up. Obviously, we're putting a heavy multiple on top of that 12-month forecast. It's 250, let's say, in S&P earnings. And, you know, you're rich on that. You're still 20 times plus. But I do think that at least if attention can turn to earnings, once the smoke clears and, you know, we get back through the back and forth of which we're not, you know, raising guidance enough. J.P. Morgan, when the CEO says the stock's too expensive for us to want to buy back a lot and costs are higher than we expected and the stock's been a monster, yeah, it's going down 6%.
And when, of course, and Bryn, when also Jamie Dimon warns of all of these things that are out there as potential major risks, like he's been doing, suggesting that, you know, in the past couple of weeks that the economy or the market's outlook about the economy is just simply too optimistic. And there are a lot of variables out there that can upset the story.
Right. I mean, I think he's very pragmatic. He lays it out for everybody. I mean, I think with J.P. Morgan, Mike hit it spot on. I think with earnings, though, you have to look at individual companies. If you think about it, you know, what, five names probably have an $11 trillion market cap collectively. If you just look at Apple, Amazon, Microsoft, Meta. And so I think that Amazon, Meta, Microsoft, and NVIDIA, I think they're going to have great numbers. I think they're going to be very solid. The calls are going to be very upbeat. And so I think we're not going to get to those numbers, though, for a couple weeks. And so I just think until we get to these big names that we're all excited about, I think you're going to have individual names. If you do not beat and raise, I think this market will not suffer fools, and it's going to be really dicey for a lot of these companies that just kind of have, you know, meh kind of earnings this season.
See, this is why, Avery, that Tony Pascarello at Goldman Sachs says exactly what Bryn is thinking, that mega cap earnings are going to be good. Okay, we may have to wait a few weeks for them to come out, but that's why you shouldn't take your eye off the ball. Stay big. Stay in these stocks.
Yes. Well, I mean, I think that there could be some bifurcation within the mega caps.
Well, there already has been.
There has been, and I think that could continue. I mean, you know, where we tend to be most constructive in the mega caps is the companies that are the most reasonably valued, but not just because they're reasonably valued, because we think they have incredible moats to their business. So we're particularly inclined towards digital, internet, media, and advertising plays. And, I mean, the companies in the large mega caps in those spaces, we think are some of the most underappreciated beneficiaries of AI. They are already using AI to have the most sophisticated algorithms in advertising and the content that they deliver to customers. That is something they can continue to monetize, we think, much better than anticipated. And in addition, you know, we've seen announcements not just from them, but from others, from some of the top consumers of AI chips. They are continuing to make a lot of progress on their own internal initiatives. We think it's too early to have a cost benefit from that. But over time, that could be a very material cost benefit that's not priced into numbers in the out years.
Mike, you mentioned the mega cap trade. Look, maybe I'm forgetting about a day, but when was the last time we had a 300-point decline in the NASDAQ? It feels like it's been a lot, especially on a day where yields are actually down because of the flight to safety trade into bonds.
Yeah, I mean, look, we hit a record in the composite yesterday. I mean, we should remember that. And it's just top heavy enough that it can be that kind of a swing and not necessarily change the overall story. I'm very open to the idea that we kind of capped the market March 28th for a little while and we have to chop around. It would fit right in with election year seasonality, getting a little bit dicier in the spring. You know, everyone's going to talk about how tax day is Monday. Maybe some of this has been selling the winners in order to cover that. Actually going to be a big capital gains realization year, which is good news maybe for the budget and the federal budget. So I think all that stuff is moving back and forth. And I don't think yields have been the prime driver of tech for a very long time.
Sure.
The secular excitement has overtaken a lot of that stuff. It's not about long duration stocks and discounting cash flows. It's about show me the earnings revisions. Show me where the big growth is coming for multiple years. And you people keep fixing on those names.
Bryn, you know, yields have definitely been directionally important for, let's say, the Russell 2000, which, not lost on me, is sitting exactly at 2000 right now. It is down 2%. It had a 2.5% decline earlier in the week before the snapback yesterday. But B of A Securities today says, we think small is likely to lag large until later this year, until we get more confidence in cuts. We've had a good debate on this program weekly about whether you can buy small caps now without rate cuts. And I think the answer is being proven out as no.
Right. I mean, I've been really clear on this. It's like, that is not the trade right now. And listen, we're tactical. We went into small cap value in December of 2020. Why? Because they're very cyclically sensitive. And we knew the economy was going to expand from all of the reopening, the stimulus. But now you have, think about it. Small cap value is a bunch of regional banks. And small cap growth is non-profitable, which in theory is very rate sensitive on both sides. And so I just think it's not a way to allocate dollars to. Stay large cap. Have other, look at free cash flow yield. There's just like so many other asset classes and factors you can look at instead of just trying to figure out Russell 2000 or S&P 600. Just step to the side. There will be a time, but it is not right now.
Avery, the broadening in this market works both ways. You know, on the prospect of strong economy and rate cuts coming means you have a much broader rally, which we'd been waiting for and we finally cheered. Okay, so how much of that trade is in jeopardy if now, okay, maybe we need to worry about the economy a little bit more. If the Fed's going to be more patient than we thought, maybe there are cracks that develop. Can the broadening trade work in a pushed out rate cut market?
It can work for companies that are still suspicious about the company's earnings growth potential in an unclear market. So there are areas within cyclicals where, you know, you could see appreciation, and, you know, areas that we're looking at where we think it's you still have enough uncertainty priced in are within autos, areas within travel, especially airlines over in Europe, again, assuming geopolitical risks don't explode. Here, very high quality airlines. Those are companies like trading at, you know, high single digit multiples, but other areas in cyclicals, like I mentioned, in construction, in industrials, in home furnishings, in machinery, you have high valuations on expectations that you're going to have these cuts come through. And that's where I think that you're likely to see some disappointments. But also, I'd say, you know, given the dynamics in the market, you know, there are still areas that are reasonably priced that are more defensive and not sensitive to interest rates going down. They actually benefit from rates going up. So we've continued to like insurance. Certain areas with insurance, you have in life insurance, there was, you know, a major short report out yesterday. I don't know whether it's true or not, but you had other insurers, you know, in the life insurance space sell off, and the fundamentals there are just fine. And the valuations are not high. You have an auto insurance, you know, continuing to have a favorable backdrop with valuations not sky high. Mm-hmm. And, you know, whatever happens to the economy, unfortunately, we're all going to be paying more for our auto insurance.
You highlight what our Contessa Brewer was highlighting earlier today in that, and she covers the insurance space, is that they were bucking the trend in a down market. These stocks were higher. But Mike, this goes to another you can't have it both ways trade necessarily in the big broadening that we have. If we've somehow changed the game on expectations of cuts and economic strength lasting, do you need to rethink these kind of moves that people went? Because there are a lot of stocks within these sectors outside of tech that went up a lot.
Yeah, I mean, the Eagle Weight S&P is right back on its lows relative to the market cap weighted. We had these kind of, you know, false dawns in July, in November, and then a few weeks ago as well, where it seemed as if you were sharing the wealth. And it has been yield dependent. That's been the rule. You know, the Russell 2000, it's still 40% on profitable companies. It just raises the hurdle for them a little bit too much. And for whatever reason, that's now the trading algorithm is yields up, you sell small caps. So I don't know. I'm more interested in are the cyclicals still beating the defensives? And so that tells you a little more about the underpinnings of this rally beyond, you know, AI names than to me is the average median stock doing better or worse than the average.
You've also made the point repeatedly that bull markets typically aren't upended by a two strong economy.
Yeah, certainly not only that. And I think, but so if you really think inflation is just like not going to go down further from here, or it's really going to be sticky and bumpy and the Fed's not going to have a way, then it inherently means you have to be worried about the Fed erring by staying too long.
Let's get to Washington. We do have a news alert, and it is Contessa Brewer, who I just mentioned covers insurance, but she's obviously watching the broader news today. What's up, Contessa?
Yeah, well, we're watching the markets and having some geopolitical jitters, especially where it comes to the Middle East. And President Biden was just giving some comments from the White House for the National Action Network. He was asked about the potential for there to be more conflict or an escalation of conflict between Iran and Israel. And here's what he said. He said he didn't want to get into specifics, but he's anticipating it sooner rather than later. And when asked what his message is to Iran, he said, don't. He said, quote, we are devoted to the defense of Israel, and said, quote, Iran will not succeed. So the sooner rather than later, Mark, is certainly attention getting here. Scott, we'll keep an eye on the markets and how they react.
All right. Appreciate that, Contessa Brewer, very much. The markets, obviously, Mike, have already
sure,
been reacting
to the
mostly to
about,
this.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we're down, you know, 560 or so on the Dow. It gave up 38,000 a little bit earlier. Fact of the matter is you're just not going to be long into the weekend with this overhang.
Yeah, I mean, if you had a sense of wanting to be tactical, yes, this is definitely going to be a net selling type of environment. Again, usually these things don't end up being the big thing that changes the trend for good. But I understand the apprehension, and it's worth remembering. I mean, the U.S. called, so to speak, the Russia invasion of Ukraine very publicly. So it's not as if they're just casually saying we think something's going to happen.
All right. So we'll continue to watch that. Dow down 571. S&P is working on a 90-point decline. And Mike said it's been a minute since we've had a 2% decline, and certainly a 2% decline across the board. And we may be doing that over this final stretch. Back to the conversation in a minute. We are keeping our eyes on shares of Apple, too, because they're actually staying positive today, or at least they were then. They still are. Steve Kovac joins us now. I guess, Steve, there's some talk this week as to whether, you know, there was an inflection point for shares, which have seemingly been down for weeks, And here we are maybe bucking that trend. We'll find out if it's lasting.
Yeah, and especially yesterday. And what we're seeing right now, Scott, is Apple resisting today's broader market sell-off, fractionally positive, about 0.4% last I looked. Shares were up more than 4% yesterday, though, because that was its best day since May 5th of last year, about 11 months there. Meantime, all of its big tech peers, we don't say this often, Microsoft, Amazon, Alphabet, and Meta, they're all down today. This is the opposite of what we've seen so far this year, with Apple significantly underperforming its peers and the S&P 500. One thing helping Apple shares, what I talked to you about yesterday, Scott, that Bloomberg report yesterday saying Apple plans to debut new processors and Max at the end of the year to enable AI features. That seems to be one of the catalysts. On the other hand, Goldman Sachs analysts out this morning with their Apple earnings preview cutting their price target a few bucks from $232 to $226. They see potential for June quarter revenue guidance to miss expectations amid weak iPhone demand, especially in China. And still a mystery what exactly Apple's AI play will be, though that chip news yesterday gave some hints. Not going to find out, of course, until June 10th, as I keep saying, when we're expecting Apple to reveal its AI plans at its annual developers conference. That's going to be the next catalyst to watch for, Scott.
No, I appreciate that, Steve. Thank you for giving us a look at what's happened this week with shares of Apple. Bryn, you're long the stock.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, it looks like technically, I mean, the stock doesn't look good. It's still below the 50, below the 100, and below the 200-day moving average. So we're just about to pop close to that 50-day. So to me, it looks like it's an upward trend still in a downward chart. And once again, I don't live for technicals, but it still looks like this big bounce is going to get tired out right here. I think you're just going to have to wait a couple of quarters until Apple actually gets their story together around what they're going to do for AI. Because to me, it still feels like it's a little bit of a fishing expedition.
We'll see. Interesting week for sure, especially in light of what's happening in the broader market. Bryn, thank you. Avery, thanks to you as well. Mike, I'll see you back in the zone in just a little bit. Our senior markets correspondent, commentator, Mike Santoli. We're just getting started. Up next, stocks sinking to end the week, as you know. But Fundstrat's Tom Lee, well, he's not backing down, says it's an opportunity to buy this dip. He's going to tell us how he's navigating the inflation situation and how many cuts he's expecting from the Fed this year. We're live at the New York Stock Exchange. You're watching Closing Bell on CNBC.
From their innovative practice facility to unmatched views from the fairway, the PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with 5G solutions from T-Mobile for Business. Together, we're using AI-powered analytics to expand coaching tools and bringing fans closer to the pros with 5G-connected cameras. This is game-changing innovation. This is the PGA of America with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
What does it mean to be rich? Maybe it's less about reaching a magic number and more about discovering the magic in life. At Edward Jones, our dedicated financial advisors are the people you can count on for financial strategies that help support a life you love. Because the key to being rich is knowing what counts. Learn more about our comprehensive approach to planning at edwardjones.com/findyourrich. Edward Jones, member SIPC.
All right, we are back with the S&P sliding again today. The S&P now on track for its worst weekly loss since October. But Fundstrat's Tom Lee says it's temporary, a temporary moment of pain and a buy-the-dip opportunity. He joins me now, Post 9, to make that case. Good to see you again. I'm glad you're here in person, too. So you don't think that much changed this week?
I think the narrative got muddled because that CPI report was a disappointment. But it was driven by what we'd call stubborn components, shelter, auto insurance. You know, the median core CPI component now has only 1.7% year-over-year inflation. I mean, inflation is normalizing. It's just not evident in the total picture.
So the PCE in a couple of weeks is going to be more favorable, we think, than these latest inflation reads. And I know what everybody says about it's, you know, it being the Fed's favored measure on where inflation is. But are you entertaining the idea that this is not going to be as easy as you once thought it was going to be for this last mile, and therefore the market can't do what you once thought it could?
I'd say that that's really the narrative disruption this week, you know, because now the Fed has three inflation reports that it can't argue against that are a little hotter than expected.
And the bulls can't really explain them away either, can they?
That's right. So what we would need to see is April and May CPI improvements, which is in the future, and then keeps the Fed from standing in the way of the economy. What we don't want is a Fed that wants to further slow the economy, which is rate hikes. And I think if they just do even one hike this year, it's still actually a good environment for stocks.
One cut, you mean?
Sorry, one cut.
Yeah, let's be clear. See, that's a Freudian slip. I mean, because the greatest fear of all is that they're going to have to hike again, however remote that possibility seems today. And even if you put into the soup, all the Fed commentary that we've gotten of late just seems to be push off rather than push up.
That's right. And I think it's, you know, at the end of the day, it's even if CPI does look like it's somewhat sticky, PCE, as you pointed out, is more cooperative and PPI is, and measures like trueflation show inflation much softer, inflation expectations much lower. So I think at some point we could also just ask, is CPI a bit aberrant?
What about the valuations of the market? How do you counter the argument that they're just way too stretched? Multiples are just way too rich, given what now is likely to be the case of cuts later on?
I mean, I think when someone looks at 20 years of history, that's the argument they'll make. If they look at 90 years of PE multiples versus interest rates, when the 10-year's between 4 and 5%, which is a pretty big range, the median PE is 20 times. So we're not even at a median PE multiple of what's existed whenever the 10-year's been in this range. So, and then if you look at the median stock, it's actually at 16 times. I'd say that there's upside to earnings. I think multiples can expand. I don't think 5,200 is the ceiling for stocks this year.
What feels like the right ceiling now?
I know this is going to be tough for investors to embrace it, but I think something like 5,600, 5,700 is probably where the S&P exits the year. Maybe
higher. Much more backloaded into that than you once thought?
I think it's still backloaded because we'll have the cuts behind us and we'll have visibility into 2025 earnings, which probably could be 270, maybe 280 next year.
Well, when you say we'll have the cuts behind us, are you so sure? Right? So let's just take June off the table. For argument's sake, no June.
Yeah.
You think the first one's in July?
Or it could be September. But
that's why I asked you if the move in the market that you just suggested is backloaded. Because
yes.
You're not going to get a big move until you see the first cut. At this point, now there's a lot of disbelief in the market.
That's right. And Scott, one thing to keep in mind is the probability of a June cut has been reduced, but it can come back if we have a good April and May CPI, because then it's going to put back into focus what is the trend in CPI. It does feel stubborn when you look at January, February, March.
Now, the flip side of the argument that the bulls would suggest is all of this is noise. Keep your eye on the ball. The Fed's going to cut. They may wait. They may not do as many as we thought, but the regime has changed and the economy is going to remain good and earnings are going to be strong enough and they're still going to cut because they're going to be able to. And they'll point to the PCE and say, just don't be blindsided by the other noise. That's the story that matters most.
I mean, I'd say that that's a story that's going to, as the dust settles from this week, that's what's going to sort of push back into the front lines of people's minds, because it's totally different than 2022 and 2023. And we're in the middle of earnings season and think delivered earnings will be good. And interest rates, look, it's not comfortable here at 4.5%, but the economy's handling it. And there's for now, yes.
So you made a call, I think, first on this program that small caps were going to rally 50% this year. It was several months ago. I can't imagine that you still believe that's going to happen now that rate cuts have been pushed out seemingly until the fall.
Well, I think the viewers need to keep in mind that small caps almost rallied 20% in a month last year. So for them to rally 50% over the next 8 months, I think it's still very plausible, given that median earnings growth for a small cap in the Russell 2000 is 19% versus 11% for the S&P, and the median PE is 10 times versus 16 times in the S&P.
Oh, I know why they're cheap, but they're cheap for a reason, some would say.
Sure. But then if we have corporate CEO confidence go up and so mergers start to happen, I think you're going to have a very, very quick adjustment in the price of small cap stocks. And again,
OK, I'm sorry. Finish your thought.
Oh, and, you know, there's $6 trillion in the sidelines as well.
OK, lastly and briefly, mega caps. Are you still as bullish as you have been?
Yes. Yeah, because, you know, I still think it makes sense to own what's working, and that's AI related and the Ozempic related names. But, you know, now on the margin, the ISM's turning up, so you want to own some industrials. And because of Fed cuts, I like small caps.
All righty. We'll see. Tom Lee, thank you.
Yeah,
that's
thanks.
Fun. Tom Lee here at Post 9. Up next, we're trading the turbulence. The NASDAQ dropping in today's session. Star VC investor Rick Heitzman, he's back with us at Post 9. We're going to get his outlook for the tech space, and we'll do that next.
From their innovative practice facility to unmatched views from the fairway, the PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with 5G solutions from T-Mobile for Business. Together, we're using AI-powered analytics to expand coaching tools and bringing fans closer to the pros with 5G-connected cameras. This is game-changing innovation. This is the PGA of America with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
All right, welcome back. Tech stocks among the hardest hit today, with the NASDAQ giving back its post-PPI bounce. And with rising concerns about higher for longer rates, is that space set up for more pain ahead? Let's ask First Mark Capital's Rick Heitzman. He's with me here at Post 9. It's good to see you again.
Hey, great.
I mean, I'm imagining a scenario in which, you know, you see this pushed off rate cut environment and say higher for longer, and you're like, oh, just as we thought things were trying to get back to normal, now are we pushing things off again?
Just as we thought it was safe to get back in the water.
Yeah.
We thought it was going to be, we'd be starting to get into the cuts. Although there's two things we really look for. You know, rates coming down helps tech because they're long-dated assets and obviously helps VC. But the other thing is, at least there's a little bit more certainty. The volatility of rates compounded that, and that was a big issue. So at least if we're able to say, hey, it's going to be higher for longer, and we anticipate that happening over the course of 24, at least there's rules of the road and people have begun to invest.
What about the return of volatility, not just relative to interest rates, but markets in general, as we're hoping that they're going to open up again, and you're going to be here talking about the latest and greatest IPO, and maybe one that you've been an early investor in. Are you pushing your expectations back there too?
We're not. Hopefully we'll be here. Hopefully I'll be here talking about that company that's being here at the New York Stock Exchange. We're preparing our companies to go. And even if rates are higher for longer, we think certain of these companies are riding big enough megatrends and have results that bear out being a public company regardless of economic environment.
So you think at what point this year are we going to start seeing more IPOs?
I think you'll see some soon. I think you're going to see maybe Harry's.com, a StubHub, a SeatGeek go out in the second quarter. I think this window before the election, you're going to see more IPOs than you have in the last couple of years.
Are they, you know, I look at a Reddit and I'm like, okay, well, this is like an idiosyncratic story. And maybe some of the ones you just mentioned are too. But what's the signal that the capital markets are truly open for business again?
I think you are going to see the more idiosyncratic stories. You're going to see the sub $10 billion market cap companies go. You're not going to see, I don't think, in the near term, a Databricks, a Stripe, which is the big IPO, which really opens the market.
What forces them to go public? I mean, what do they need to see before they feel comfortable and secure in this market?
They're going to need to do a big finance, a billion-dollar type IPO, which means there's going to have to be a lot of dollars that are currently on the sidelines off the sidelines. So they're going to want to see a healthy market, and they're not going to be forced to go. They have plenty of capital. The private markets are open for them, whether they want to do share buybacks from their employees or whether they need to raise primary capital or acquisition financing. So they're not in a rush, and that's the other side of the coin of they're not in a rush. The markets aren't ready, and it'll probably take till post-election time frame for that to happen.
Where are we in terms of, you know, non-AI, non-GLP-1?
Yes.
So I've thrown another variable in there, so you can't pick that either.
Yes.
If I took those two out, what's the trend that's the next bet that I need to think about now?
That's pretty hard, because I think those are the two mega trends that we're seeing play out across the ecosystem.
Still,
you're still seeing, you know, the highest valuations in the public and private markets being somehow correlated to AI. And sometimes they're chips, and sometimes they're hardware like Astera. Sometimes they're application level, like, you know, a Databricks or even a Data IQ in our portfolio. But then the next trend is probably GLP-1s on healthcare, and you're seeing the manufacturers, distributors, all those companies performing incredibly well due to fundamental demand. Beyond that, I think there'll be somewhat of a return of enterprise.
Well, you were early, maybe the earliest money in row, right?
Yes. And they're seeing fundamental demand for Robody and Rodotco's kind of body and healthcare products that, you know, as Ozempic and Wegovy are now becoming mainstream, and you're seeing a lot more use cases for health that are really going to change the environment.
Is there, when you look, for example, you know, I'm looking at all the mega cap tech stocks today, and so they're all down, except for Apple. If that trend is broken for a while, is that the easiest barometer to perhaps look at to figure out where sentiment is broadly for even a venture person?
We look at more narrow-based things. So we'll look at, like, the SaaS companies. And how are the SaaS companies traded? Or how are the public data companies traded? The Datadogs, the MongoDBs. How is that correlating to our infrastructure software portfolio? And there might not be appetite for application software. There might not be appetite for D2C companies. But there might be appetite, as enterprise spending turns back on this year, for data infrastructure companies who are driving real ROI.
All right, good insight. Always good check-in with you.
Yes.
Rick Heitzman, thanks.
Thanks.
That's First Marks. Rick Heitzman here at Post Nine. Up next, we're tracking the biggest movers into the close. Steve Kovac is standing by with that. Hey, Steve.
Hey, Scott. Yeah, we got one AI name dropping on an analyst double downgrade, and a well-known pet care company's shares are falling as well. We're going to reveal those names when Closing Bell returns after this.
We're about 15 from the bell. Let's get back to Steve Kovac now for the stocks he's watching. Hey, Steve.
Hey there. Yeah, let's start with Zoetis. Shares of the animal medication company down about 8% heading into the closing bell. That's following a Wall Street Journal report today on the potential side effects of its arthritis drug. Some pet owners in the story blame the drugs for the death of their pets. Zoetis says its drugs are safe. And Arista Networks down as much as 9% today following a double downgrade from buy to sell from Rosenblatt analysts. They warned the networking company may not benefit as much as previously thought from the build-out of AI data centers.
All right, Steve Kovac, thank you very much. Still ahead, chips getting whacked and wrecked. That sector being weighed down by Intel and NVIDIA. We're going to dig into those big moves, how the rest of the sector is faring ahead. Closing bell's coming right back. Well, we made it. We're in the closing bell market zone. CNBC senior markets commentator Mike Santoli here to break down the crucial moments of this trading day. Plus, Intel and AMD weighing heavily on the chip space. We'll dig into those moves. And a rare bright spot today, Seema Modi on gold hitting record highs yet again. We'll do that in a second. But, Mike, leave us with something to think about over this weekend.
Pretty good flush today, I do want to say. Even though the selling is sort of moderated, it's like 95% downside volume in the New York Stock Exchange. And we're in that mode now, saying, okay, maybe on a short-term basis, you want to see things get a little bit oversold, get people get just a little bit afraid, frankly, of what there could be to come. I do think that the market kind of kept from spinning out further when you had oil and gold come off the highs today. So it didn't just seem like some kind of runaway risk-off move. All told, almost 3% down from the highs in the S&P. We're sort of trying to make peace with a 4.5% 10-year yield. Mm-hmm. I think that's almost a little more present than the notional, well, maybe we're going to have to wait a few months more for a Fed rate.
I was going to say exactly where you left it there about, you know, you watch yields next week, you know, to see what happens and see how much pressure, if they continue to go up or back up, that that's going to continue to put on the market.
Or if that's where, you know, buyers seem to feel like there's value being created. And some level, as we saw today, you know, it becomes self-correcting, because if people get really scared of other stuff that's bigger than the Fed, they'll start to buy treasuries.
Mega caps, too, are going to be a tell next week. Let's see if the weakness continues there and what the broader meaning of that could be. And then Apple, staring at that, 4% up on this week, 176.5.
Yeah, this feels like a if you're reducing crowded positions all across the board, you're kind of buying the stuff you're underweight or short, like Apple, because it's been such a dog, and you're selling the stuff where you have the profits. Now, that said, it's really made a stand in this area multiple times in that 170 range. It definitely takes the edge off the valuation. You kind of get a feeling that, you know, it's underperformed the other big names enough in the short term. So I think that's why you get this mean reversion type move. To me, the bigger issue might be, is there real selling behind these pullbacks in Meta, in the other real big winners of this trade? Or is it just kind of, again, taking some off the top, pay some taxes, reduce your overweights.
So far, a lot of these dips have been bought, as you know, and that's what you're obviously alluding to. Look, we're going to start getting a busy earnings calendar, too. So we started with the banks. The stocks do poorly, but now it's going to get real. The calendar is full next week, and the movements in the stocks based on what the earnings are going to be a real tell as well.
For sure. It's interesting because last quarter, the reporting season started off very stingy in terms of the market not really giving that much benefit for the beats and also punishing the misses. But then it sort of settles out over the course of the earnings season. I think it would be a welcome thing to have a lot of dispersion in the market. By that mean, a lot of stocks going their own way because of their own news and fundamentals. And that would be a little bit of a rescue from the macro spiral that we've been in for a while, which is all intensive about inflation and the Fed and yields.
Pretty nasty day for some, under the NVIDIA surface chip names.
Yes.
Intel today down more than 5%. AMD is down more than 4% today. You do have this news that China told telecoms to remove foreign chips.
Yeah, which seemed like obviously a catalyst, but maybe not some brand new fresh thing that's a needle mover for all of the stocks in the group. It has been NVIDIA, AMD, and Broadcom against everything else. There really hasn't been much conviction in the rest of semis in terms of the cyclical drivers. If you look at the XSD, that's the equal-weighted semis, it's really done nothing for months, while the market cap weighted driven by NVIDIA has really been the big winner. So again, these stocks are momentum, they're secular growth, and sometimes they're just kind of beta. So when the market's down, they get hit.
All right, Seema Modi, oil up, dollar up, bonds up, VIX up, gold up, new record again.
And what makes this interesting, Scott, is the prospect of higher interest rates does not seem to be stopping gold's rally. We're looking at the yellow metal hitting another fresh high today, trading above $2,300 an ounce as investors pile in. Gold now on track for its third straight week of gains, slightly lower right now. But PIMCO's Mohamed El Arian posting on X this morning that central banks are increasingly looking to gold as a way to hedge against geopolitical risks. Goldman's new price target for gold now $2,700. So analysts do seem to think there is more room for upside here, Scott, when looking at gold.
Appreciate that, Seema Modi. Thank you. You want to weigh in on what's happening with gold here?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where you can kind of construct your narrative because real rates have been going up. It used to be that's what mattered for gold. There obviously was a technical breakout. You absolutely see capital flight into it. People are unnerved about whatever it might be, whether it's treasury supply or the deficit or geopolitics. That said, just sheer vertical momentum in gold recently has gotten it, you know, way up in thin air. And that's why I do think that you can look at the fact that it sort of lost a little bit of the juice midday as something that I think is probably a positive, that it's not just going to completely blast higher.
Sure. Well, I mean, it is key, I would think, for next week as well, that we break the commodity and dollar fever.
Yeah, this reflation trade, it's fine as long as it's really kind of following global growth expectations and things like that. Just outsized moves in individual agricultural contracts and things like that, I think it makes it seem as if there's a little more behind it in terms of just fast money grabbing on these things. And you know, it has an inflation push aspect to it. But I do think that it's getting a lot of adherence all of a sudden, this idea that commodities are someplace where you don't, you know, if you're looking for something to diversify that's not called treasury bonds, people are finding their way to commodities.
Yeah, I mean, we're still down about 500 on the Dow, but we are off the worst levels. So we likely will have a 2% down day for the Russell 2000. Not so much for the others, although obvious weakness. Watching financials, let's just sort of bring it back full circle where this day started. They delivered, the stocks did not.
No.
And you've got that sector the worst today.
Yeah, it's just very difficult for this group to perform if what you're really worried about is Fed's not going to give them relief. The economy's okay. The credit metrics were fine in the financials. So that's why I wouldn't panic too much about that. We got an IPO that traded up today. It seems as if this could just be kind of the ebb and flow on a risk-off day. I'm not really ready to say that's going to lead the market lower.
All right. Deep breath. Bell rings. Have a great weekend. I'll see you on the other side. Into OT with Deirdre Bosa.
From pit lane to podium, the Las Vegas Grand Prix is providing fans a race day experience at the speed they deserve. With the help of T-Mobile for Business, our 5G advanced network solutions are powering race day operations with event-wide connectivity. From streamlined gate entry to an immersive app, giving fans blazing fast access to the sport they love. This is accelerating innovation. This is the Las Vegas Grand Prix with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.